Okay, we'll start. Okay. Jai Ma. So we continue the life divine, flow with the life divine, and we can look at it in several ways. My own favorite way is it's the journey of man, starting with the human aspiration and going towards its complete fulfillment. This idea of complete fulfillment is important because we will see as we go through the chapters why Sri Aurobindo speaks of the divine life in a divine body. Because there are partial fulfillments on the way. And man can be satisfied with these. He can rest content with these if he wishes. But ultimately, the purpose for which the earth is made is to transform this earthly life to the life divine. Of course, it is mother's wine, so it should be received with joy, not with a very serious face and difficult idea. It's not philosophy in the technical sense, though it is the ultimate philosophy. It's not philosophy in the sense we understand that normally we look at things outside and we draw logical conclusions. For example, if we see evil in the world or ugliness, we draw a conclusion which is a very, very puerile, childish conclusion that there is no God. Instead of trying to understand his ways, if at all. But we draw these conclusions, which are, as I said, very sort of matter-of-fact conclusions about life. As Sri Aurobindo challenges this in one of his aphorisms, because I have failed, or because a good man has failed, shall we say that the world is bad? First I must be clear and convinced that failing is bad. You see, there is already a conception in the mind. If I fail, if I fall, all this is bad, death is bad. Anything which contradicts myself, my ego is bad. It's a presumption. That's how we have theories of karma and all of them, based on which we draw conclusions about the divine and the world. So, Sri Aurobindo doesn't take that approach. He takes the approach of the ancient seers. First find the reality, then talk about it and its link to the world. So, this is the Indian approach of darshana. It is first you must get at the, as they say, the bottom of things. And even a basic detective understands this, that he doesn't draw immediate conclusions based on the clues or evidences. All who have read Sherlock Holmes understand this very well, because the end point may be very different from what we have been thinking about in life. So first and foremost is find that reality. So Sri Aurobindo found the reality. There are others who have found the reality. But what has happened is, when they found, they discovered, they were content, so happy that finally we have found destination, ultimate destination, dream destination. So after that, they didn't care for anything else. Okay, that's past, that's over. That's the end of the story. But obviously that cannot be the end of the story. Maybe for an individual, it may be the end of the story, but it cannot be the end of the story which is going on, storyline, upon earth, collectively. So Sri Aurobindo's whole yoga is to find the link, the missing links between the supreme, the divine, and this earth. And we can make it a little more simpler. There is the divine existence, the divine perfection, the divine worlds, where all is beautiful, all the opponents live together in harmony. So in Vishnu Lok, Shir Sagar, the Vasuki and Garuda are in perfect harmony. They are supposed to fight, enemies of each other. And in Kailash, the Musaka and the Vasuki, this is Sheshnag, sorry, and there Vasuki and the Musakraj and the peacock, they are all in harmony with each other. So that's one kind of experience of life. But here, even the Vasuki and Vasuki are fighting, even the two doves are fighting. So you can't explain this on the basis of that. And therefore, people drew a conclusion that earthly life is only a preparation for the beyond. This can satisfy half-hearted souls. But it cannot satisfy the heroic impulse in man, which wants completeness, fullness, fulfillment. It makes an absurdity of creation. Because we were already there, why did we have to come here? So there is a higher hemisphere of existence and a lower hemisphere. The higher hemisphere is full of divine worlds where everything is wonder, miracle, joy. And there is a lower hemisphere, the triple world of mind, life and body, where we are struggling, crawling, trying to fly, cannot fly too high, have to keep on taming our heart, taming our thoughts. Even if we don't try, they get tamed. Earth's drab realities. So, is there a link between these two hemispheres? They are called as Pararth and Aparardh. And that missing link, Sri Aurobindo gives us, that missing link is the supermind. So supermind explains how the divine worlds, the one supreme, became this. Apparently it's opposite. Why it became this? This is the other purpose, other question. How it became is one part. Why it became all this? And then how this can be transmuted into that original reality while here upon earth? So all these are the unanswered questions. So often for me, when we read Sri Aurobindo, to me it is the Shesha Prashna, the question that is left unanswered by all the spiritual literature and other literature so far. And I'm saying this with responsibility, having read all of it. There is an unanswered question. We may try to ratiocinate, try to logically explain away, but there is a problem which we need to answer, not only for ourselves, but for the world. So Sri Aurobindo beautifully starts. Today we have only one session because there is early dining. So it's mainly a background, and so that we connect with what's going to come. So what are his findings that he has discovered and given to us? Now he has explained all this very logically, but this logic is not the logic that is based on the surface observation. So what is his logic, and why surface observation is not enough for us to give the correct picture? Because surface observation is faulty. That's the problem, because we see the outside. We don't know the inner links. We don't know what is in the past. We don't know the future. All that he will reveal to us. But when we see the total picture, then we have all the missing links. So there is a logic, very logical. But this logic is top-down logic when we have seen it all. And then we say, now those who cannot see it, it helps us to strain. Oh, there is something like that. So there comes the yoga part from philosophy, the urge to yoga, the awakening to yoga. So as we see, the journey starts with the human aspiration. And the human aspiration is always for ultimately for perfection here. And all our unhappiness stems from the gap between our wish, will, idea of perfection and the actual realities. And all the psychiatrists earn a lot of money because of this gap. As somebody has said, I mean, I can share about my profession. Not all are like that. But who is a psychologically disturbed person? Somebody who is making castles in the air. And a psychiatrist who takes rent for staying in those castles. Not quite. Sometimes he has to demolish the castle. But none of this is a solution. Castles in the air is not necessarily, it's an escape, poor fellow. He's living in his own world, maybe a fool's paradise. Because he doesn't know what's an option. He wants perfection here, but we don't know how and why. So it all starts with human aspiration, which is always for, regardless of our belief, non-beliefs, religion, secular, it's always for perfection here in one way or the other. That perfection means perfection of knowledge where there is no error. Perfection of bliss, a joy that does not drag sorrow. perfection of love, there is where everything is perfect, 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 perfect understanding, perfect care, perfect union, intensity and union forever together, eternal. So, perfection of peace, not a peace which, for which we wait when we go to the graveyard. So that we are seeking here. And because we are seeking here, one day it will be fulfilled. So it starts from that. So, as he says in Savitri, man's impossibles are God's sign of things to be. The impossible is God's sign of things to be. Earth's winged chimeras are truth's steeds in heaven. And man's impossibles are God's sign of things to be. Then in this, man has taken these two routes. One is moving away from the world to discover the reality. Those who discovered ultimately going in some peak, they simply from that vantage point looked at the world. It's such an infinitesimal dust that they declared it is nothing. They forgot that in this dust God dwelt. That's why one could discover him. But they discovered it is nothing. It's Maya. It's illusion. The other route that man took is to plunge into matter, to discover what is there in matter. And then as he discovered more and more, he says, no, no, there are mechanical laws. There is nature which is doing everything. There is no God. There are some lotus-eating, people who are hallucinating about God. These other two approaches he took. But the truth of the matter is, there is a reality omnipresent behind all the... Sometimes Shurbindu's titles are such that just meditating upon them opens doors. For example, I love this title, Reality Omnipresent. It literally is, if you may say, Sarva Khalvidam Brahman. This was the phrase Shurbindu meditated upon in the Alipur jail. When he used to walk between the Goshala and the place where the prisoners had to do work, he would meditate upon this Sarva Khalvidam Brahmam. All this that is the divine. Reality omnipresent. Just meditating upon it opens doors. So if that is the case, is there a truth of our individuality? What is our role? What is our destiny? What is man doing in this world? And then he contrasts two ways of knowing this world. One is through the lens of the ego. We are given two lenses. One is before the cataract, one is after the cataract surgery. Or rather, we have born cataract. Ignorance. Name of this cataract is ignorance. So we look at everything with the lens of ego. So what does ego does? It says, man, you are the center of the universe. Everybody must move around me. Its extreme height is the extremely rakshasic and asuric man who devours everything. Because there is behind the sense of unity. So how does an asura create unity? By devouring everything, eating everything. If he is in a family life, he'll crush everybody, dominate everybody, possess everybody. Everybody must do his bidding. That's how the asuric nature predominates. So there is this ego which believes and wants that everything should turn around it, including God. So a God who doesn't fulfill his wishes is no God. So he switches from one God to another, one God to another. And obviously finds nothing in the end. So he declares there is no God. He doesn't understand even for a moment that his premise is wrong. So what does the ego do? It dualities. Whatever satisfies me is good. A person who was praising me till yesterday, oh, he's a wonderful man, you know. Suddenly one day he says, you know what? Dr. Pandey, you don't seem to be reasonable. You are a stupid person. You know, this fellow, he's the worst creature. I misjudged him. Maybe for a change he had the courage. But we can't see like that. So ego plays with dualities. It cannot know oneness. It cannot know truth. It cannot organize the world harmoniously. That's for sure. But there is another way to know, and that he, in this chapter, it methods of Vedantic knowledge. He says, no, there is another way. You start with an intuitive sense. There is intuitive sense of unity. There is intuitive urge for harmony. Impulse towards that. That's why we fight. You ask two people fighting. You say, why are you fighting? No, no, I want to have harmony. So why are you fighting? Because this man, he is the problem. So you call the man separately, ask him, why are you fighting? He says, I also want harmony. What is the problem? This woman, she is the problem. So there is disharmony forever, because that's the mode. But Vedanta goes to discover first the root fundamental reality behind all things. So what does it discover? It discovered the pure existent. Sat. Ekam Sat. Vipra Bahudha Vadanti. Or if you take the sixth scripture. Ek Omkar. Sat Naam. The pure existent. There is something which we can call as existence, but pure existence. Again, meditate upon this pure existence. We all exist, but there is the original self-existent reality, Swambhu. So there is Sat. And then there is Chit, conscious force. We have been told Satchidanand. So Shurvindo, one by one, reveals to us each aspect. What is pure existence? Sat aspect of the supreme divine reality. What is Chit? So Chit is Chit Tapas, because whenever we become aware of anything, automatically awareness and action are intertwined with each other, which may include in action. I may become aware of something and I may choose in action. That's a choice I am making. Always. So Chit is always combined with Tapas. So conscious force. If somebody pushes me from behind, I'm aware of something pushing me and I get angry. If I look behind and see, oh, it's my friend, then my anger changes. My reaction is something else. So there is always awareness and action. That means knowledge and force that go together, which is called as Chit. So we have conscious force, meaning thereby this world is not built by random bricks of chance. There is a conscious force which has gone into it. He'll take up the problem that if it is a conscious force, why do we see these mechanical laws? Actually, even if we see behind the mechanical laws, we are forced to conclude that there is an intelligent working in this cosmos. It may not be to my ego's liking, but an unconscious mechanical force cannot create this kind of intelligible paradox in the world where everything acts as if it is intelligent, except that if you do an IQ test, it cannot pass. Very strange. The stars, the atoms, everything. So there is a conscious force, and then he takes up the most challenging part, Ananda. So he is Sat Chit Ananda. So okay, Sat and Chit are fine. These are the two original mysteries, existence, consciousness. But our problem is Ananda. We all want Ananda. So there is a divergence between the way Buddhist teaching is understood. I am not saying what Buddha said. What Buddha said is one thing. What Buddhists understood is quite another. So, how it is understood is that this world is born of desire. He used the word desire. Well, in Dhammapada he uses the word, but he is not referring to the ultimate reality. He is referring to things here. Desire brings suffering, and there is a lot of things which is an action of desire. It's true. And Sri Aurobindo and the mother's husband, they used to have this, I wouldn't use the word discussion, but the mother describes that he would say that the world is a creation of desire. And Sri Aurobindo would say, no, it is Ananda. And both can bring, we can have a logic for both. Ordinarily, when we look at this world, our operating system is desire. But why do we desire? Go behind. For the joy of things. So if you look at it, desire is only a frontal method, mechanism. Supposing a thing which we are desiring stops giving us joy, then the desire also collapses. So the real driver is delight of existence. But in front there is the seeking for joy, which is a mistranslation of delight. So it takes up delight of existence, the problem. This is the problem. Why it is a problem? We are seeking, we don't find it. Universally. Beautiful lines in Savitri when he describes the Divine Mother. The fountain of the world's delight that we seek outside but never find. She is the fountain of the world's delight. Often people ask, what is it that you get in Pondicherry? What miracle happens? My answer is, we begin to laugh, we begin to smile. We had forgotten how to smile. We had forgotten how, a laugh was all, you know, what laughter has become. Man has destroyed even that in the name of laughter. But we learn to laugh genuinely from inside. And then we are told you are mad, which is okay. Better be happy and mad than be with a sorrow, sullen face. So this joy of existence is the origin of things. But world seems to be its opposite. We experience pleasure, pain and indifference. So this is the problem. So he describes what is the solution. So of course the solution is that instead of looking at things from the ego perspective, we have to look at things from a deeper vision. That he will come to in great detail subsequently. And then comes the big word, the divine Maya. World is Maya. And Maya, Shobindo describes, by the very adjective it changes its meaning. It is the original way of understanding Maya, because Sri Krishna uses that in the Gita. He says, this is my Maya, therefore you cannot go beyond Maya. Shobindo uses very powerfully, you cannot slay Maya, you can slay Moha. Moha is a deluded way of dealing with things. Maya, Sri Krishna says, my Maya. How can you go beyond? So, but we can be with the Maya, understand the finite on the basis of the infinite. That's how Sri Krishna deals with the world, and we cannot understand because it doesn't follow any of our ego standards or yardsticks. So the divine Maya, that's the term he has used. So what is Maya? Maya is that which measures out the infinite, gives us the seeming of finiteness, seeming of smallness, littleness, which is an extreme result, seeming of limitation. And that seeming is so strong, so strong. Even recently when somebody is unwell and wanted to, you know, try out, you know, whatever means to cure, taking medicine but not extreme surgery, which was, I felt, very reasonable. So everybody, that's not the way. So the person said, but mother has said, finally it is faith that cures. Oh, all that is okay, but don't go by these suggestions. See, how strong is the Maya? You are a limited being. You can't say these things. You can't live these things. You can't do these things. You are, after all, a crawling creature on the conscious globe. Unconscious crawling creature on the globe. This is Maya. This is Maya that makes an elephant forget how mighty it is. And poor human is sitting on top with an anchor and elephant is moving. If once it decides that I am Ganpati's, I am the elephant. This is Maya, that lions are put inside a cage. And what has that lion tamer done? He has simply used the policy of reward and punishment. And they are dancing to the tune of his whip. This is Maya. This is Maya that you open the cage and the bird refuses to step out and fly. It is afraid and comfortable. But there is this other Maya. This Maya is the Maya that limits. But there is the divine Maya which knows the limitation and its purpose in the whole creation. It knows it can come out of it any time. So that is the divine Maya. So there are two Mayas, two modes of working of the same Maya. In front is the Avidyamai, where we forget the oneness, we forget the divine origin. And so we are struggling as if we are very limited people, helpless creatures. But there is the Vidyamai Maya, which is always conscious of its oneness. It doesn't break the limitations. It knows how it has to be used for the great purpose. And the classic example is Sri Krishna's life, who says, it's my Maya. So Sri Krishna should have suddenly got up in the middle of the Kurukshetra or at the beginning when Arjun said, you know, I don't want to fight. He should have said, get aside, I am going to do the rest. Picked up his Sudarshan Chakra and finished all those in one go. Sudarshan Chakra obeys the command. He could have simply said, done, put one, all the names you tick, and they said, destroy. Finished. One moment, all is gone. Now, why is Divine Maya doesn't do that? People want those magics, miracles all the time. Sri Krishna's birth, you see, so many miracles are taking place. But he doesn't do that with Kansa. It is so strange. He could have simply sent a lightning stroke. After all, you know, he is God. And suddenly in the palace of Kansa, lightning would have struck the palace and he would have died like that, you know, Iranian general inside the house. He could have done it, but he doesn't do it. Why he doesn't do it? Because it's not a question of killing one Kansa. If the Yadukul and the Gokul is not ready, they will replace him. They will be seated new tyrants on its back. See what happened today in Bangladesh. Those who apparently fought, thinking they are fighting for some great cause, look at where they stand today. This is the paradox. So man has to be ready for a great fulfillment. Hence, initially, he has to feel the pressure of limitations, struggle against it, and then prove worthy at a time when the divine Maya, the Vidya Mai, discloses. Then it doesn't mean he abandons his bow and arrow, but he becomes a conscious instrument of the divine. So there is the divine Maya playing with us. And then, of course, he, whose Maya? Who is the creator? Supermind as creator. So we read that. That's our home actually. Supermind as creator. But it's not for nothing we have wandered here. We have come here to create something of what we have. We always remember. That's why we want perfection. Because we have come from there. We can never forget the home. So we want to create a home, sweet home here. So supermind as the creator. And then what is the Supreme Truth Consciousness, how it creates, all that it describes, reveals all the mysteries one by one. And when I read these chapters of the Life Divine, we have already read them earlier, so I'm not going into it in detail. I remember a line from Sri Aurobindo's poem, Who? He says, we shall tell the whole world of his ways and his cunning. So in the Life Divine, he's revealing all about the ways of God and his cunning, and it's so fascinating to discover it. And really it fills the heart with a gladness and delight. It's like when you misunderstand someone and suddenly your understanding comes. What a lovely feeling it is. And then there is the triple status of supermind, where it describes three poises, and we can compare it with, let's say, an author who has to write. So there is a status where author is in a state of nothing. There is no impulse, no urge. Same author, suddenly seized by an impulse to write. Second status. And when he is seized by the impulse to write, there are characters which begin to emerge. Free-floating characters. But they are still loose. They are not really in a kind of order or unity, real unity. I mean, they are all... So this is a question which, if God has created this world, he is infinite. So there should be all, everything should be jumbled up, because basically there is no order. He is infinite. But when he begins to write on the cosmic page with the pen as time, then the characters begin to take place in order and you have the Mahabharata. So these are the three poises of the supermind. One where it knows itself as the Lord and Creator, but not yet as the Creator, as the Supreme Lord. And then where it starts creating, and we are, there is one and the many together. That's our origin, because we are part of the many. And many is always a part of the one. And then the third poise, where each character is unleashed into the play. It must develop itself fully. It cannot just be happy. So we have now this Ramayana going on. Lav Kush cannot just say, I am Rama's son, I am Rama's son. No, he has to face all the challenges, sometimes worse challenges. Ultimately, he discovers what it means to be Ram's son. So that is the story for all of us. the supermind has released all of us into this creation, all our souls, and the Shakti has built these many worlds. What for a wonderful line, a gymnasium for our exercise. So every time we feel stuck in a situation, this is the challenging exercise. All right, let's do it. But when you finish it, you say, thank God, I'll take rest. No, wait. You have crossed 4 feet. This is how mother works. High feet jump, high jump. 4 feet, mother. See, I am a 3 feet high boy or girl. I have jumped 4 feet. No, wait. While you are relaxing, the bar is raised to 4.6. Do it. After some time, it's a delight. That's how this world operates. There is no rest for the embodied soul till it has completed all time's curve. It cannot rest. So this is not a post-retirement place, this yoga. Let's retire, we'll have some fat pension, and then we will rest in peace. Rest in peace, that is in Muthialpet. God knows. At least the relatives rest in peace, because this fellow, old cranky fellow, is gone. But there is no rest for the embodied soul. There is a beautiful passage in Ilion where he says, once we have chosen to be as the gods, we must fulfill that motion. As long as we were in Eden enjoying the fruits, it's okay. Once we chose, ate the fruit of knowledge, and we are here, we must fulfill. As she says, man is a god, but he has to learn the lesson of humility. Then only he can ultimately develop. So he is this god who has the complete evolution of earthly life, will go beyond the gods. That's how man's destiny is. And then there is this divine soul, the Jivatma. Now comes the building blocks of this creation. Now from the higher, he comes to the lower. This is how things should be. He is taking the same root of Ashwat tree. The roots are in heaven. If we understand God, we'll understand the world. But if we think we are over smart and understand the world and we don't need God, we have not really understood the world. This is the logic of spiritual things. If you understand God, you will understand this world. If you know Brahman, you will understand water. That's how Shubhendu writes. Otherwise, there is no way we can really understand why H2O has those properties which we call as water. But if we understand Brahman, then we can understand. Knowing which all else can be known, yasmin vigyate vigyati sarvam. So he starts with now mind. What is this mind? Never mind. So it comes from supermind. But slowly, in the origin of mind, it retains something of the supermind. Like a person who comes out of the school has all, he has stood first class first or whatever it means, 99 percentile or 100 percentile. You ask him any question, he will say immediately. Complex algebra, trigonometry, we all have gone through that phase. Ask him after 2 years, I don't know. So that's how mind comes out of the supermind. But as it enters into this earthly adventure, it begins to lose that all knowledge. It becomes all focused. And so there are two minds. One mind which is in conjunction with the supermind, that's the overmind layer. And all that he has spoken to us, and more he'll reveal. But there is another mind which has become a mind of ignorance. And the way to understand, very simple way, that if I am concentrated in an activity too much, then I become so identified with that activity that I may forget everything else that is around me, within me. And people may sometimes take offense that you didn't take note. If somebody suddenly comes, your reactions are very perplexed. The person believes that, but you know me so well. But right now you are identified with that activity. So the mind of ignorance or the mind of knowledge changes into a mind of ignorance because of this selective concentration. And this selective concentration ultimately leads to a complete identification with the material substrate. So it becomes that little mind which is moving in that little circle inside matter. It's like somebody who has lived all his life in a village cannot understand that there is so much more beyond his little space. He cannot look beyond his parents, beyond his surroundings. So he cannot understand there are so many viewpoints, so many ways to look at life, so many kind of relations. So it becomes a very small, narrow, limited mind, and that's what ignorance is. Ignorance is not an absence of knowledge, but a partial knowledge. So that's how mind comes. What about life? So mind comes from supermind, but has become what it has become, mind of ignorance, struggling. What about life? Life comes from chittapas. It's always seeking for joy, delight, and force. So it's always seeking for, it's a force which is always in motion, setting everything into motion. See, that's the nature of life. It's always restless. When mind develops, the restlessness is transmitted to the mind. Always. So, and when you cannot do anything, you cannot control your own, you know, you can't just, then you start controlling others. Which means now, life has become old. So you start, you know, how others should be, should not be. So life has this nature of expansion. Vayu Matarishvan. And it comes from consciousness. It comes from chittapas. So life increases in awareness, increases in the power and will to be. That's what life is all about. And then comes, what about? So he describes about life. So why death comes? Where from desire? Because behind the struggling life, there is all life always. So it's seeking all life, what it carries within. So what does it do? It's like somebody who is carrying a treasure in his pocket. What happens when we carry our phone in the pocket or in the bag and we have forgotten it? We turn the house upside down because phone is more essential reality than discovering your own soul. We open the fridge, we open what not. Whole house is upside down, especially if you have only one phone. That's why I advise, keep two phones so that you can call. Well, it's not a good advice. Handling one is good enough. But the point is that this is the great difficulty, that life always is seeking, but it does not know how to find it. It wants everything. This is the nature of life. You give it one thing, little bit. This is the famous story. Somebody said, I want just a little from God. Okay. I have nothing. I will be happy. So you give little. Then God says, shall I go? No, just little more. Little more. You give little more. So after some time, sir, a bit more. So bit more. Much more. Much more, okay, I've given you, now you're happy. No, sir, there is so much which I don't have. Can you give me everything? Mushaka Bhava, you were better in that state. The only way to have everything is to, whatever is given to us, to turn it toward the infinite. The only way is, tena tyaktena bhunjita magrida kasya svidhanam, isha vasyam idam sarvam, yat kinche jagat yam jagat. So, there is the sense of desire is born. And because of desire, we suddenly experience limitation. I want, but I cannot have it. So what happens? Because we experience ourselves as a limited being, finite beings, but we want to experience the infinite. So death says, okay, fine. You wanted always to go to London and America. Next life, I'll put you there. No, I know it's not worth going, but there are people who have this. So next life, God puts them in London and America. Then they say, oh, there is a place called India. It is so lovely. I've heard about it. I've heard about sadhus going to Kumbh. Oh, what a sight. I can't stand on the road and have golgappa. I can't eat with the hands and relish every finger. India is worth going. And then God will say, you are the fellow who wanted in London. I have sent you. Now you want to come back to India? I want to come back. But then you also get a liking for Arabia. I have heard so much about. So this is the problem. That's why death comes. Because we are seeking the infinite. Now there is evolution fast forward because of all kinds of movements and television. So there is evolution fast forward. It may have its harms, but it is giving you a kind of experience of life, which otherwise we would have after dying. So we are having it while living. I am not an advocate of television. All experiences can be had within. But in ignorance, these are the means and mechanisms people use. Computer which interlinks the world. So there is death, desire and incapacity interconnected. From there comes the ascent of life. So there are three levels that life experience itself. First is the material mechanical life where it is submerged by death. The term used is asanya mrityu. It is actually death. It takes the form of life. Look at these bacteria, viruses, they emerge. And if you don't give them too much importance, they will die. But doctors have to give them a lot of importance. I was just noting that when I graduated in medicine, somebody was saying that I didn't have any antibiotics, so I took doxycycline. I'm sure doctor will understand. At one point of time, doxycycline came. It was a revolution because we only knew tetracycline and then letermycin brand and sulfadiazine. Then amoxicillin came. It was so good. Now we'll beat all the germs out of existence. Penicillin was, of course, there. Now the strange thing is we have so many antibiotics and we have so many germs like Rakt Beej. It's a fact. Such mutant ninjas, they're not ninjas, they're bad guys, and you discover an antibiotic, these fellows are ahead of time. They anticipate and they mutate. So look at it. The first status of life is asanya mrityu. It's coming out from the gulf of mouth of death and going back. And it's bring out like a magician hat. The second status is where life begins to experience some kind of an individuality. And with that comes the struggle to affirm its individuality, to assert its individuality. That takes the form of struggle for existence. So that's the second status. Most people believe that's the last. Out of that is born the third status of life. And that is the law of love. So law of the second status is to devour and make one. So we'll see this in human relationship. The most vicious form of love is where you want to finish the other person's individuality. Crush, destroy. And this is a most pathological relationship where one person becomes completely dependent and the other person loves doing so because you ultimately are devouring. This is one kind. But the other is you unite through love and association. That's a higher law. And as man evolves, the mind evolves, we begin to discover this law. Devouring and destroying is not the way, but joining through love is the better way. So this is the ascent of life, and Shrivindo says, it's not yet complete. From the third status arises the fourth. It cannot arise from the second. From the third status, because of love, one begins to feel a sense of universality. There arises the fourth, which is the fulfillment of life, which is the supramental life, the complete fulfillment of a divine perfection. Having revealed all this to us, ascent of life, then he takes up the problem of life. All of us know that. Need not dwell further. And then he takes up very interestingly. Suddenly the double soul in man. Logically, mind, life, it should be matter. But Sri Aurobindo does everything with a very deep and profound, wonderful, super logic. So why the double soul? For two reasons. One, because we have a surface soul. It's soul in the sense that we think it is my soul. So all this search for soulmate is this surface soul. It's the desire soul. So soulmate equal to everything that I want in the other person. All the affinities, checklist, tick, tick, tick. That's the soulmate. Till you get married. And then either life stagnates after that romantic interlude or whatever happens to it, it tends to, you know, because life seeks to grow, progress, evolve. And for that you need somebody who contradicts you, who challenges you. God's wisdom is like that, that with every woman and man, both ways, he puts somebody who will challenge you. So it's something very nice, complementary beings. That's the best, where the person has something which you lack. That's the ideal. But it usually takes this form of completely very different kinds of personalities. Anyways, it's not a class on human relationship. So we have the double soul. The surface is the desired soul. I want this. I like this. I wish. That's what the desired soul. And it is needed at its own place. But behind it is the true soul or the psychic entity. So we have these two levels at which we exist. The surface personality, the surface mind. What is the surface mind? It is formed by my outer experiences of life. Everybody has a surface thought and based on whatever one has outwardly experienced is limited by that, bound by that, bound by the sensory experiences of life. But there is an inner mind which is open to the universal currents. Similarly, there is a surface life. We are bound by all the habits, customs, traditions, everything. And there is a deeper life which seeks for something greater, higher. There is even a surface physical which reacts in habitual ways. It's changed. Like if you see 30-40 years back, the way man would react to physical injury or physical illness is very different from now, because our surface physical has learned some other things. Like I can't be healed unless I go to a doctor, and worse is it started with he has to give me injection. So in India it was not enough that a doctor sees the patient and prescribes. Doctor saab injection likh do. So we all know we used to give injections sometimes, and if you give IV then it is an impact. You are giving water, distilled water. What else can you do? There is no injection required, but it healed. Your injection has cured me. So what is this? Surface physical. But there is a subtle physical. Now there is similarly a surface soul or a surface self, which is a mix of the ego and desires, which we call as me, myself. And behind it is the true psychic entity. Now why Sri Aurobindo brings it here is, one is because life, desire, soul. But also because the psychic entity is the first point at which we can take a breather. Because we discover the heaven within us. Anybody who has had the psychic realization, and there is that in Savitri you see those five cantos dedicated to discovery of the soul. So when Savitri discovers the soul, he says that, well, we have created heaven within. One man's perfection still can save the world. A camp of God is pitched in human time. And then in the next canto, Savitri is in a beatific state. She forgets Satyavan is going to die because it's irrelevant after that. You have discovered immortality. This is what happened to many yogis. So they said, matter, how does it matter? Mind, never mind, matter doesn't matter. I have found my soul. Also because the soul can open doors to the universal and the higher spiritual minds. So, all the more, valle valle as they say. Now I have access to these realms. I can do everything or many things except the material problem. Now see what a good job the scientist is doing. Hardcore material scientist. He said, all that is okay. Change this. Now there have been yogis who have even shown extraordinary things on matter. Raman Maharishi, it is told that, you know, he could go through a surgery completely conscious. Many of them, Sri Ramakrishna, Paramahansa, they bore these. He had throat cancer and everybody would tell him, take voice rest. But he would not, because when people would come to him wanting him to speak, though his disciples would say, no, no, don't trouble him, don't trouble him. He would say, no, no, no. This mother's work. And he would speak. When he would speak, strangely everything will be fine. These are partial victories. But again the pain will return, the problem will return eventually. Throat cancer took the physical. Same thing we see with Swami Vivekananda. So ultimate, you are, so many yogis say it's okay. I have discovered the kingdom of heaven within. I know the divine. As many souls I can awaken. Done. Now I am going back happily. And surely somebody who has discovered the soul, even if he has not gone still further to the higher realms, is full of that inner peace and joy. Has the doors of knowledge open. So there comes this status, the double soul, where we can rest, we may rest. But we must know this is not the fulfillment. Who is waiting is matter. So after that we have chapters on matter. Matter says, sir, what is this? Kabir says, jyo ki tyo dhar dini chadariya. I have just left my chadar. That's not enough. Because somebody else will wash my linen. So this is why matter comes toward the end. In between there is the double soul. This is what we had read last time. We'll just read a little bit quickly from that. So first he describes about the egocentricity and then the discovery of the soul. And what it does. We are on page 238. The true soul secret in us, subliminal, we have said, but the word is misleading because it's very deep inside. Subliminal is as if below the waking surface. But there is a whole journey to reach there. So it is not subliminal but behind the veil. This veiled psychic entity is the flame of the Godhead, always alight within us, inextinguishable even by the dense unconsciousness of any spiritual self within which obscures our outward nature. So it is inextinguishable. So this is the meaning of Akhandi Jyoti. It's not outside you light up a diya and keep pouring. We may do it for our satisfaction. But this flame, once awakened, it never can be extinguished. As such, it is burning inside. This is the permanent thing that we take with us. So what do we take with us? Some people say you don't take anything. Others say you take the karma. No, sir, we do take something which is permanent with us. And it is the secret soul. And if you have discovered it, we go happily. So this is the first step. It is a flame born out of the divine and luminous inhabitant in the ignorance grows in it till it is able to turn it towards the knowledge. So it has deliberately gone into matter, hidden itself like the seed. First it must grow in the darkness, struggle with darkness. There is no shortcut. At the end, of course, it faces the final puzzle of matter. You cannot touch matter till you have at least discovered this and the higher. So it's not possible. So that's for later. It is the concealed witness and control, the hidden guide, the daemon of Socrates, the inner light or inner voice of the mystic. This we must find to really lead our life based on what my inner law of being is, Swadharma. This is the seat of Dharma. It's not the voice of conscience. And then Sri Aurobindo distinguishes it, just a couple of lines below. Not the unborn self or Atman. For the self, even in presiding over the existence of the individual, is aware always of its universality and transcendence. It is yet its deputy in the forms of nature, the individual soul. So, there is a whole Vedantic thought, pure monism, which ultimately denies the individual soul and its reality. But both Sri Aurobindo and Sri Krishna affirm the reality of the individual soul. So the universal soul or the universal self is Atman, or the self with a capital S. And that is the universal self. So in that experience, the individual self is still its, it knows it's my portion. And we have to discover the universal self, but also the individual soul, which is our true self. Chaitya Purusha, supporting mind, life and body, standing behind the mental, the vital, the subtle physical being in us, and watching and profiting by the development and experience. So, though the ego experiences pleasure and pain, the psychic being always grows within. There is a line, it drinks experience like a strengthening wine. I don't know what is strengthening wine, but the Lord says so. It drinks experience like a strengthening wine. Of course, there is a strengthening wine, and that is the original somras. If we drink that somras, the delight of the divine, it intoxicates, but it also gives us strength. It is the nectar of immortality that we all seek. Once we drink it, then, you know, otherwise, don't give me medicine, it is very bitter. But the soul would know. This is the actual reaction of the soul and the ego. Ego looks at life and says, why me? Why this is happening? Life is so bitter. Life is so sad. God is cruel, etc., etc. And the soul would say, take this bitter medicine. No, it will cure you of egoism. Sri Aurobindo used that term. The soul knows that the ego must be crucified for the real self to emerge. So it goes first into darkness, experience of darkness, then it grows. Then it is delivered to the light. And few lines below. It is this secret psychic entity which is the true original conscience in us, deeper than the constructed and conventional conscience of the moralist. For it is this which points always towards truth and right and beauty, towards love and harmony, and all that is a divine possibility in us, and persists till these things become the major need of our nature. So moralist only as a construct. This is right, this is wrong. Mostly out of fear, which is the worst kind of motivator. He is moved by fear or desire. So, whatever he desires, he justifies. This is right. whatever he is afraid, either of this world, in this world, or in some whatever hell there may be or may not be, he is afraid. So he doesn't do things. Now that's not how the soul operates. It may choose to enter into hell if that is necessary for its evolution. That's the story of Yudhishthir. What a marvelous story. After his shedding the body, of course, even before that, there is the dog, which is Dharma. He doesn't abandon, because he's told, this attachment is preventing you. He says, okay, you call it attachment, I call it love. Attachment is egoism in love. I can't abandon my friend on the way. Then Dharmaraj appears. He says, actually, I am the dog, you know. And then when he goes, he is first sent to hell. That you spoke a lie for some time. Though actually Yudhishthir was, poor fellow, was already punished. First of all, it was not a lie, half a truth. That too, he spoke the full truth. Sri Krishna did whatever else. But still a lie, okay, your intention was like that. So you have to first go to hell. Few moments, just a few moments. Chinna suffering. So he goes there. And then as he says, yes sir, it's over, time up, like sometimes you are at Samadhi, no, time up, but there it is different. So time up. So he says, all the people who are there suffering, they say, sir, please stay, your very presence is soothing us, it is making us feel happy, good. So Yudhishthir says, I don't want a heaven. I want to stay here. And then it is like, ultimate test was this. We were not giving you any punishment, Yudhishthir, but we have realized you are truly a Dharmatma in the highest sense. So this is how the two operate. So somebody, moral conscience has a format based on which it acts. But the deeper soul seeks for truth, good, beauty and love. It doesn't care for anything else. Whatever the world may say, not say, it seeks for these things and finds these things. So he distinguishes. It seeks harmony. The need for harmony is very strong in somebody who is developed in the soul. Instinctive. You cannot create, that's a different thing, because your awakening of the soul is not enough. But the need for harmony. All these things. On the contrary, where the psychic personality is weak, crude or ill-developed, the inner parts and movements in us are lacking or poor in character and power. Even though the mind may be forceful and brilliant, you may have studied in, I don't use the word Harvard now because of all the degeneration, or you may have studied in, well, best university in the world. Oh, he is so brilliant. He has studied. Sometimes people say like that. Oh, he has studied there and I feel like saying, so what? He's the same brute person. Ultimately, his eyes are fixed on the food and the money. See, Ramakrishna spoke of that. There are some birds who are like vultures. They fly high. They're very strong. But their eyes are fixed on the loaf of flesh. So what is the point? Whereas a person may not have studied much, maybe apparently illiterate, but maybe full of this truth inside. So our value system. So a person may be forceful and brilliant. The heart of vital emotions, hard and strong and masterful. The life force dominant and successful. The bodily existence rich and fortunate. And an apparent lord and victor. It is then the outer desired soul, the pseudo-psychic entity that reigns, and we mistake its misrepresentations of psychic suggestion and aspiration, its ideas and ideals, its desires and yearnings for true soul stuff and wealth of spiritual experience. At one place, Aurobindo says that man's successes are often God's failures. Why? Because, and often people who flaunt too much, that means they have become aware that this is hollow. If somebody keeps saying, I am a doctor, you know, I am this, I am that. So someday you should ask, are you really? I have actually, we had a case who kept, you know, I am Air Force officer, I am Air Force officer, real story I am telling you. Then it was discovered he was not an Air Force officer. So I said, you should have got it. Why is he telling everybody that he is an Air Force officer? If you are an officer, you'll be fine. Why should you need to tell? If you are telling everybody, first thing when you give your biodata card, that means there is nothing inside you. Nothing worth, you want somebody to be impressed by the biodata card, keep it aside. Meet the man or the woman or the person. So here comes this, that he says that a person may have all this. If the secret psychic person can come forward into the front and replacing the desired soul, govern overtly and entirely and not only partially and from behind the veil, this outer nature of mind, then we can say that the person has arrived at the true life. And he goes on to say toward the end, this is very small, no bigger than the thumb of man, Angushta Matra Purusha, and he says something very interesting. That if one has, this is not stepped forward, and there is a person who's only this outer success, outer mind, brilliant mind, emotions very strong, intense, powerful, life force which is very strong, body which is whatever is called as handsome or whatever, good looking. But this is missing. So Sri Aurobindo says, it is for such a man that we say he does not have a soul. There is a soul, but it's not got connected with the body. And Sri Aurobindo was asked this question, sir, everybody has a soul? He says, yes, but sometimes even I have to take it as a faith. Nature is crude, hard, unrefined, careless, insensitive. You don't care about anybody. You are only thinking about you and yourself. So leave them to their own way. Don't try to change them. For us, discover our soul. And when we discover our soul, then comes this problem which we will take up tomorrow. What about the body? So we can either say, I don't care. I have found my soul. I have found peace with myself. I am constantly in a state of inner joy and peace. Okay, I'll share this with others. But beyond it is not my work, because body will remain what it is. Its work is over if you have discovered your soul. That has been the story so far. But Sri Aurobindo challenges this assumption and says, if this is the close, high close of human endeavor, then it at the end makes a nonsense of the whole creation, the process, and a very poor result for the long, long struggle and labor. There is something more. There is a secret we have to learn. Something that is hidden behind the veil of matter. And that's what he will help us discover through the following passages. So we'll stop here. Tomorrow we will have two sessions, hopefully. And then we'll take up matter. What is matter? It's a promo. What is matter? Okay. Thank you.